the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, as kids head back to school, health officials are warning about a new wave of e-cigarettes disguised as everyday objects, even with built-in video games. Despite crackdowns, more than 1.6 million youth still use e-cigarettes, most of them flavored and largely illegal. Coming up, Radio Catskill's Annie Bennett speaks with Brian King from the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, and we'll hear from Sullivan 180's Amanda Langsander about local efforts to keep vape products out of the hands of minors. Before they were legends, Talking Heads lit up CBGB. Rare footage from 1975 is finally seeing the light of day in Ellenville. We'll hear the story behind it. Plus, the 5th annual Catskills Conductors Clam Bake and Art in the Garden in Narrowsburg after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Defense officials from several countries are meeting at the Pentagon today. They're discussing how their countries might help Ukraine if a ceasefire is reached with Russia. France and Britain are prepared to send peacekeepers to Ukraine, but Terry Schultz reports their mission is not yet well defined.
It's not clear whether this mission would be to sort of monitor a ceasefire or reinforce it or defend certain lines. And those verbs all mean very different things, carrying different levels of danger for those deployed. In general, European countries are going to have to send forces, and it seems about 10 have committed to doing that so far. But some options are much less palatable than others.
Terry Schultz reporting. President Trump says the U.S. will assist with security guarantees for Ukraine, but won't send U.S. troops there. Meanwhile, Russia's foreign minister says any conversations about security guarantees are pointless if Russia is shut out of the discussion. Forecasters say Hurricane Erin continues to swing away from the East Coast. It's not going to make landfall, but Erin has triggered life-threatening rip currents from Florida up to New England. Officials in several states have put up no swimming signs on beaches, but local officials in North Carolina say they've already rescued dozens of swimmers from danger. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein has declared a state of emergency. From member station WUNC, Bradley George reports some people on the state's Outer Banks have been told to evacuate.
August is usually a busy time on North Carolina's Outer Banks, but residents and tourists were ordered to leave Hatteras and Ocracoke Islands. Governor Stein says people who live elsewhere on the coast should be prepared to evacuate. Shelters have opened on the mainland. Erin would be the worst storm to affect the Outer Banks since 2019. That's when Hurricane Dorian swamped Ocracoke Island with 7 feet of water. For NPR News, I'm Bradley George in Chapel Hill.
Stocks opened lower this morning as discount retailer Target reported another drop in sales. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 10 points in early trading.
Target stock has a bullseye on its back after the retail bellwether said sales at existing stores fell nearly 2% in the most recent quarter. That's not quite as bad as forecasters had expected, but Target continues to struggle. Retail rival Walmart is set to report earnings tomorrow. Target's chief executive, Brian Cornell, will step down from that role in February, but stay on as board chairman. He'll be replaced as CEO by Target's chief operating officer, who's been with the chain for 2 decades. Home improvement giant Lowe's is buying a big drywall and insulation company for nearly $9 billion. The acquisition of Foundation Building Materials is part of Lowe's stepped-up efforts to cater to professional builders. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 9 points. The Nasdaq is down nearly 250 points. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Israel says it is calling up another 50,000 reservists. They'll be used in a major military operation against Hamas in Gaza City. The draft of the Israeli reservists is supposed to start very soon. The increase would nearly double the number of active Israeli reservists in the war in Gaza. The Environmental Protection Agency is planning to reverse a landmark scientific finding. This has been the basis for federal climate regulations for more than a decade. This decision could potentially lead to more emissions. NPR's Michael Copley reports the move could also carry serious risks for corporate America.
The EPA said in 2009 that climate pollution threatens people's well-being, paving the way for the government to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. The EPA now says it doesn't have that authority. That could weaken a defense fossil fuel companies are using in state lawsuits, where they argue climate change is an issue for the federal government to deal with. Jeff Homestead is an environmental lawyer.
There's plenty of people out there who want to bring lawsuits, and it seems like this would just invite a lot more litigation.
Business groups say having national climate rules also creates a predictable environment to make investments. Public hearings on the EPA proposal are scheduled for this week. The agency says it hasn't taken final action. Michael Copley, NPR News.
Texas state lawmakers are expected to move forward on a Republican plan to redraw congressional maps for the state. The GOP hopes to use the map to send up to five more Republicans to the U.S. House. California Democrats meet tomorrow to consider a redistricting plan to boost their numbers in the House as well. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Visit St. Pete, Clearwater, Florida, where visitors can unwind on white sand beaches and dine at restaurants. More at visitspc.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As students go back to school this fall, health officials are warning about a new wave of e-cigarettes that target kids, some of them even disguised as everyday objects or with built-in video games. Despite crackdowns, more than 1.5 million youth across the country still use e-cigarettes, and nearly 90% prefer flavored products, which are largely on the market illegally. Experts say nicotine use at young ages can have serious lasting effects. Radio Catskill's Annie Bennett interviews Brian King, Executive Vice President for U.S. Programs at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. And after we hear from him, we'll hear from Amanda Langsader from Sullivan 180 about local efforts to keep vaping out of the hands of youth. But first, here's Brian King from the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids.
As students are going into the new year, what are some things to be aware of?
So as kids are headed back to school, we want to make sure that parents as well as educators are mindful of an important public health risk, and that's tobacco product use, particularly e-cigarettes as well as other emerging products. We've seen considerable declines in tobacco product use among kids nationally. We're actually at the lowest levels in the past 25 years, but there's still over 2 million kids that are using these products.
So it was my understanding that most of these new vape products, like Juul and Elf Bars, are not made from tobacco, but are made from nicotine. Is that correct?
According to the U.S., the Tobacco Control Act that was enacted by Congress in 2009, products containing nicotine that are derived from the tobacco plant are regulated as such.
Got it. Okay. And why are these so bad?
For one, it's a highly addictive drug. It can also harm the developing adolescent brain, particularly the part that's responsible for learning and memory and attention. And it can also prime the brain for addiction to other drugs. And I'll add that the brain actually continues to develop till about age 25. Prohibiting people from using these products during youth and young adulthood could potentially protect them from a lifetime of addiction as adults.
And tell me about these new illegal vapes that I'm seeing in the news.
The vast majority of e-cigarettes on the marketplace are not authorized by FDA, and such are illegally on the market. At present, the only products that have been authorized e-cigarette-wise in the U.S. are tobacco-flavored and menthol-flavored. And so the variety of youth-appealing products out on the market, you know, everything ranging from fruit and candy to unicorn puke, whatever that tastes like, are indeed on the market illegally.
So you would say that they are being intentionally targeted towards youth?
The more recent varieties of these e-cigarettes come in a lot of youth-appealing ways, including resembling gaming devices, having Bluetooth, and some even resembling highlighters and other everyday objects. We know that the advertising is highly influential in getting them to start, as well as the flavors. And then, of course, the nicotine keeps them coming back for more. And so it's that trifecta of advertising, flavors, nicotine that influence youth, the use of these products.
So let's go back the last 10 or so years. Obviously, this is sort of a new thing. I'm 24, so I actually remember being in middle school when Juul started getting really popular and were being marketed towards kids, and it completely changed the market from my memory. And my perception is that before that, cigarette use among teens was at an all-time low, and we sort of almost beat it. And then these products come in again, and they spike. Is that an accurate perception? How does that all play out over the last 15 years?
Yeah, so we started to see declines in cigarette smoking among kids in the United States in 1998. And the reason is because a master settlement agreement was implemented, and it basically prohibited a lot of the ways where these products were being advertised to kids. That said, with the introduction of e-cigarettes, which entered the U.S. around 2008, we subsequently started to see increases among kids. And that peaked in 2019, where we had over 5 million kids that were using e-cigarettes in this country. And so since 2019, we've seen a 70% decline in e-cigarette use among kids. It's now at the lowest levels that we've seen in a decade, but there's still more work to do. There's over 2 million kids using tobacco products. And we also want to be mindful that there's new products entering the marketplace. And so the only tobacco product where we've actually seen a slight uptick within the past couple of years is nicotine pouches.
What do parents need to know?
Yeah, so ultimately it comes down to regulation and education. You've got the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and other federal agencies that are working very diligently to remove illegal products from the shelves and to protect kids. But the education piece is also important as well. And that's where everyone serves a role in terms of parents and educators. And so what they can do is make sure they're looking for the signs and symptoms of nicotine addiction. And so headed back in the school year, looking for behavior changes, whether that's mood, changes in sleep pattern, changes in eating patterns. These can all be indicative of being exposed to nicotine. And if they're seeing those, it's important to have a conversation with kids. And we do know based on the evidence that shorter, more frequent touch points can be more effective than a longer sit down. And what you don't want to be is punitive either, because we know we're dealing with a highly addictive drug in nicotine. And so if you do have a youth who's using these products, it's important that you get them to help. And that is in the form of a healthcare provider and a pediatrician who can set up a best plan to make sure they quit and can get back to peak learning back at school.
And how do parents distinguish those symptoms versus normal teenager things like mood changes, appetite, sleep, etc.? That could be vape use, but it also could be puberty.
Yeah, there's certainly other factors that could lead to some of these. And this is where I think a conversation is really important. And you also want to be mindful of looking for signs of these products themselves. Some of these products can be easily concealed. And so it's important to be aware of not only what they look like, but also those signs and symptoms, and then using all of that information to inform discussions with kids. And as I noted, it's really important that these not be, you know, punitive, because we are dealing with a highly addictive drug.
What are some of the specific issues that we're seeing rise in kids after long-term use?
We know that, of course, that the lungs are designed to breathe clean air. And so when you're inhaling an aerosol that includes ultrafine particles, we have seen respiratory illness in kids. We also know that it impacts the prefrontal cortex.
What if I only vape every once in a while?
So we do know from the available science that even intermittent use of these products can lead to signs and symptoms of nicotine dependency. And so even if you're using it intermittently, that can still induce those intermediary pathways towards dependence and addiction. And so although most kids who are using these products aren't necessarily using it every day, that doesn't mean that it's not problematic. And all frequent users were at one time infrequent users. That's how dependency and addiction works. And it's particularly important to be mindful that the levels of nicotine in these products has increased over time.
What do you think the biggest takeaway for parents and for teens to know going into this new school year?
Biggest message is that tobacco product use, including e-cigarettes, continues to be a public health concern. And it's important that we're aware of those risks and also mindful of the evolving landscape of products. And if you do have a youth who is using these products, get them to a healthcare provider immediately. And if parents are interested in learning more, they can go to tobaccofreekids.org. And in the meantime, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Let's prevent them from starting to use these products in the first place.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate having you.
From Liberty, I'm Annie Bennett for Radio Catskill.
And we're continuing our conversation about vaping among teens. Here in Sullivan County, earlier this summer, law enforcement teamed up with community partners to crack down on illegal sales of vape and tobacco products to minors. The effort was part of the Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan, which includes Sullivan 180. Joining us live is Amanda Langsetter from Sullivan 180 to talk about the community's anti-vaping efforts and why prevention matters Good morning.
Good morning. So great to be here.
Thanks for coming in. And can you start by explaining Sullivan 180's role in this coalition for a vape-free Sullivan?
Sure, absolutely. A couple of years ago, we were lucky enough to receive some opioid settlement funding through the county and start rolling out something called Catch My Breath, which is a vaping prevention program that's done grades 5 through 12 with students in the classroom. And we did that in response to really an overwhelming school administrator request for, hey, this issue is getting out of hand. Every time we catch a student with a vape, it's 3 hours of administrative time that's being used to deal with this. We really need help, and we need prevention help. We need the kids to understand the implications of the vape long before they ever try it, because already we know that those candy and fruit flavors are enticing enough. But they need to know really the reality of the vapes long before they even get put in front of them.
And there was an enforcement initiative behind this. How did Sullivan 180 and your partners help prepare the ground for this?
Yeah, you know, this was something that really just makes me so proud. The Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan came together, gosh, coming up on a year ago now, a group of organizations and school district leaders, law enforcement leaders, school resource officers, and agencies that were really concerned with what was happening out there and how many kids were getting hold of the vapes. And so we started really doing some education and making sure that we as a coalition were prepared. And then Chief Diagata said, listen, you know, I think we could pull together an enforcement detail, but we need to have all of the agencies across the county, police departments, our county sheriff's office, and our troopers all kind of engage in this together. And so he took the bull by the horns, Chief Diagata, and helped us get...
Chief of police for the Village of Liberty Police Department, for folks who may not know.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. Chief Diagata from Liberty Police really got everybody to the table and made the plan for the enforcement detail. At the same time that he was rallying the law enforcement, we were going out with our partners from SALT and Cornell Cooperative Extension and county government and doing what we call compassionate compliance checks. So we were just kind of walking into gas stations and convenience stores, and I was honestly telling my story as a mom and dealing with the vaping issue at home, how I was struggling with it. We were talking about the fact that we want their businesses to thrive here in the county, but we also want our kids to have a shot at being healthy. And these products being sold to them under the age of 21 is really a detriment to them. The vapes oftentimes rolls into other addictions, you know, from vaping marijuana to alcohol use, all of that, and drug use. So we really need to nip this in the bud now. And I have to tell you, a lot of the gas station owners and convenience store owners are also parents, and they got it. They got the message loud
and
clear.
I want to ask you about that. How was the reaction? You were doing this outreach with local retailers, and you walk in, you know, with this information that you're providing, your personal story, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
What was the reaction? Were they receptive and willing to comply?
I think by and large, they really were. There was the sense that, you know what, we weren't walking in and banging down the door and you know, or causing arrests. We were coming in truly as fellow members of the community and fellow parents, people who care about young people in the community and having the conversation. I really think that worked. And I'm so glad that, you know, I met Marty Colavito when I did, because I was kind of going into the gas stations frustrated as a mom, overwhelmed by the situation. And he said, Amanda, let's go talk to people and let's just make sure people know, because there's a better way we can do this. We can make sure that every young person is being ID'd and checked, and we make sure that we keep these things out of their hands.
Marty from Sullivan Allies Leading Together Assault.
Yeah.
Beyond enforcement, what are the biggest challenges in educating the community about vaping and its risks to youth?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. I think that the real barriers are starting young. And I say that because just yesterday I was at Monticello Middle School, and I could see that when I was starting the conversation about vaping prevention with some of the parents, there was like a little bit of discomfort. Like their child was standing there and they were like, oh, no, she's too young. He's too young. And I was like, oh, gosh, you know, I know for me, my son was handed that first vape at 12, and I really wish I could turn back time and have had that conversation with him at 10 or 11 or 5. I mean, whenever it was, just have had that conversation. So I think really some of the barriers are having the conversation sooner rather than later, and also remove the guilt. If you are a smoker or you are currently using e-cigarettes, let go of the guilt. This is about making sure that we empower the health of the next generation. And you know, if you are addicted to e-cigarettes or cigarettes, how hard it is to quit. You wouldn't want that for your child or for any young person. So take out the guilt and just make sure we're giving the young people in our community, the right information and the education.
Can you talk a little bit more about that guilt factor and how that interferes with trying to do the right thing as parents?
I think that, you know, oh gosh, it's so hard when you have, you don't want to, you want to practice what you preach, and you're thinking, gosh, I can't necessarily tell my kid to not do this when I'm doing it. Well, there's a big difference here. When you're a young person, your brain is still developing until the age of 25. And we know that nicotine, tobacco products, all of that significantly impacts brain development. So this is so important that we keep young people safe and that we keep these products away from them so that they have the opportunity for their lungs to fully develop, their brains to fully develop, for them to get to be active and enjoy sports and the activities that they love to do. These vapes, they call them depression sticks for a reason, because they also lead to mental health issues. And nobody wants that for a young person either, to be struggling with a mental health problem to boot. So I just think it's so important that we talk to kids as young as possible. We keep the conversation going. And I do want to mention, because I'm really excited about this, we have a national organization, PAVE, Parents Against Vaping E-Cigarettes, that is coming here to Sullivan County in November. So please be on the lookout for Sullivan 180's updates. They're going to be here. It's November 5th in the evening. They will be here to have a conversation with school leaders about alternatives to suspension and what it is that we can do to support kids that are getting hooked, other than suspend them. And then to talk to parents, because it's really isolating. You kind of are embarrassed. You don't want to talk to other parents when you've discovered this about your child. But PAVE, Parents Against Vaping E-Cigarettes, is going to blow open the conversation so we can really open this up and talk about it.
We're spending some time this half hour talking about e-cigarettes and vaping among teens. We're talking to Amanda Langsetter from Sullivan 180 about the anti-vaping efforts in Sullivan County and the Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan. Earlier, I mentioned how some of these e-cigarettes that target kids are disguised as everyday objects.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them include video games, which I found surprising. I guess, we're talking about how peer pressure, or just like, depression stick, as you mentioned, or just other factors play into it. But that's also a concern in terms of how these things are marketed to kids, too. And that's got to be a major issue in terms of just, getting them to understand they need to get off of it.
Yeah.
The health risks.
It's so lousy. It's really kind of encouraging our kids to be deceptive. And that's what I really don't like.
What are these everyday objects, by the way?
Yeah. No, absolutely. You're right. So there are video games. We've seen like SpongeBob's that are actually vapes. We've seen, they look like a little mini Dunkin' Donuts drink. It's actually a vape.
Oh my God.
We have seen sweatshirts that have lanyards, typical lanyard sweatshirt, but actually the lanyard is a way to vape from it. We've seen kids take water bottles and be able to rig the water bottle into a vape. And so it's causing students to be really deceptive. They put them in their sleeves. They're trying to vape them during class because they're addicted.
Yeah.
Not because, of any other reason than they are now addicted to nicotine, and it's really hard for them to sit in class, and not have access to nicotine.
Do you think that there's a difference in terms of how when I grew up, smoking, there was a whole anti-smoking initiative that was out there in advertising. And I grew up, my dad was a smoker, he did his best. And in fact, one time I said I wanted to try it and he gave it to me and I'm like, I want to try this again.
Yeah.
But there's this whole culture of folks and generation of folks that grew up with that. But now you've got this more kind of deceptive marketing, this sort of cooler thing. Do people think that this isn't tobacco or this isn't nicotine because it's cool or different? It's not a thing you light up and smoke?
There was tons of confusion. And of course, we know what Juul did. They marketed their product as a way to quit smoking, which was a total lie, because there's more nicotine, actually three times as much nicotine in many of these vapes as there is the standard cigarette. So just like you, my dad smoked cigarettes. He was heavily addicted to cigarettes, and he tried so many times over and over again to quit. This product is three times more addictive, so we really have to have some compassion and some empathy for both the youth and the adults that are hooked to these products. It's that much harder than cigarettes to get off of them and release the product. It's also a habit,
Yeah, I'm just wondering if people don't understand that more because it hasn't. Well, I guess we're doing it now. We're talking about the dangers of vaping and e-cigarettes, but just not thinking it's like a tobacco cigarette traditional kind of thing you light
up. It looks really benign. People think it's water vapor, and in fact there is absolutely no water in any e-cigarette. My son used to try to tell me, Mom, it has vitamin B6 in it. Yeah,
good
no,
one.
Nice try, kiddo. But now there really are their diagnosis connected to it. EVALI, which is e-cigarette vaping associated lung illness, is an actual diagnosis that's happening in our hospitals often. So we really need to, you know, raise awareness, talk to our kids, and talk. People just don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And if you didn't know that vapes were three times as addictive as cigarettes, then you would try it because Juul probably told you that this is a way to quit. Well, it's not that way. And we really need to give our kids, the next generation, the information that they deserve.
Law enforcement during this crackdown earlier this summer in Sullivan County reported a, quote, significant majority of stores were in compliance.
Yes.
And from your perspective, is that encouraging progress? And also, is it encouraging progress just with this coalition doing what it's doing?
I'm so proud of the work of the coalition and so grateful to law enforcement to have come together in that way to do the detail. I'm thankful that, yes, our gas stations and our convenience stores, for the most part, are doing the right thing. I do think that there are still some folks that really need to get the message that you need to ID. You need to ID at the register, and you need to make sure that these products are not going into the hands of young people. We have a responsibility here to make sure that youth have the chance to grow up healthy, strong, with lungs that they can do all the fun things they want to do and be ready for their next steps in life. So I think it's tremendous what has happened with the coalition. We invite everyone to become a part of this. As I mentioned, PAVE, Parents Against Vaping E-Cigarettes, coming here in November. If you are a parent out there and you've either been living with the secret that your child is hooked to vapes, or you're struggling with vapes and you want to make sure that you know other people don't get hooked, join us. Please just be part of the conversation and the solutions. Let's come together. And that's the Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan.
And it's an ongoing effort. Kids mm-hmm. are going back to school soon. Anything else that's coming up for school-based education outreach?
Thank you for asking that. Yes, Catch My Breath is still available and going out to schools. We graduated quite a few groups this summer from SUNY Sullivan and the Bethel-Town Parks Camp. We've got a lot of great opportunity for schools and youth groups to get involved with Catch My Breath. So if you have a group of youth, grades 5 through 12, that you want to have some information or some educational programming done with vaping prevention, we are ready. Nicole at Sullivan 180 goes out all over the county. She's ready for you. So please give us a call and we'll make that happen.
And there's more information at Sullivan180.org. Before we go, lots of messages here, but what's one overall message you want the retailers and parents and young kids to take away from this effort?
Sure. Vaping can start out, and again, it's very benign, but it can lead to other addictions. So, you know, that strawberry or cotton candy vape might seem really harmless early on.
The Dunkin' Donuts one that you mentioned, the shape of a Dunkin' Donuts cup.
How many teenagers, you know, love to go to Dunkin' Donuts and get an iced coffee or a latte or whatever it might be? And these are really sneaky. At the end of the day, Big Tobacco wants you as a customer. Their other customers have died and they want you as a customer. You are just money to them. You are just income. And so be smarter than that. Let's all be smarter than Big Tobacco and make sure that we keep young people here in Sullivan County the healthiest generation they possibly can be.
That's Amanda Langsetter. She's the Senior Director of Prevention Programming. Says it right there on her tag.
I made it easy for you.
Thank you for joining us today. And more information again at Sullivan180.org. Thank you so much for your efforts and also to the Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan.
Thank you. And thank you for the story that came up before this with your intern. Incredible work being done by WJFF to get the national news right here locally. So thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and when we come back, some unseen footage from the Talking Heads finally resurfacing in Ellenville. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
With federal funding for public media eliminated, listeners all over this country are stepping up to support public radio. Hi, I'm Ilsa Chang from All Things Considered.
And I'm Aisha Roscoe from Weekend Edition. We're here to share a little of what people are saying. Kyle in Brooklyn says, I'm skipping two lattes a month to keep Steve Inskeep in my ear each morning. We see you and thank you, Kyle.
Farouk in El Paso, Texas says, public radio is one of the key bloodlines of this country, keeping communities connected. Thank you, Farouk.
And Diane in Juneau, Alaska says, I'm so sorry this day has come. You have my support as long as I am able. Thanks, Diane.
If you have already made your gift to the station, or if you're a sustaining donor, seriously, thank you.
If not, please join the movement to protect public radio today and tell us why you're stepping up.
Here's how to donate, and thanks.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, if you know punk rock or new wave from the 70s and 80s, you know CBGB, the legendary East Village club where bands like the Ramones, Blondie, and Talking Heads first made their mark. For those who've never heard of it, here's your chance to step inside. The Common Good in Ellenville is screening never-before-seen footage of Talking Heads performing at CBGB in 1975, captured by Metropolis Video. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with John Hazard of Metropolis Video about public access to music, the theatrical edge of Talking Heads, and how collaboration fueled the rise of these emerging artists.
It was 1975 in the East Village in New York City. A group of young filmmakers, who called themselves Metropolis Video, were cutting their teeth shooting punk rock and new wave bands at the CBGB nightclub. And one of them was an NYU film student named John Hazard.
With a name like mine, you could say I know enough to be dangerous about a lot of things.
That was John. Using borrowed film equipment, John and Metropolis Video worked to bring the eclectic music scene of the village to all on public access television. It's safe to say we might have no record of the early work of Blondie or the Talking Heads without John and his team. And you may find yourself at the Common Good in Ellenville this Friday, August 22nd, where Hazard will be showing never-before-seen footage of two early performances of the Talking Heads filmed at CBGB in the 1970s.
The people I hooked up with, who were essentially were the Metropolis Video folks, I got brought in because of my camera skills. And I knew the woman who was a part of Metropolis Video. Her name's Pat Ivers. She's got a whole story herself. And so essentially, these people that I have remained connected to through all this video work were active as former students. They were really actually working and volunteering at Sterling Manhattan Cable TV. And they were the ones who were distributing and making available portable video equipment through the public access channel. That was the whole idea, is that anybody could walk in off the streets and use what was at that moment brand new portable video technology. And so that was what my friends in Metropolis were focused on. They were doing public access. And once they got down to CB's and saw what was happening, they thought, there's no live music. Why don't we do live music? And had a weekly television show on public access Saturday night at midnight live from CBGB. And we showed all the video that we were making in those days.
But Hazard notes that as soon as the Talking Heads came into CBGB and started working with Metropolis, his artistry and craft as a videographer was pushed to new heights.
You talked about how the Talking Heads, you worked specifically with them and they were really interested in public access of their music. Can you talk a little bit more about what their ideas were, what they worked with you on? What were they particularly passionate about in working with you?
More than any other of the bands that we filmed, Talking Heads wanted to see what we were doing, and they had input. So basically, when David Byrne saw the way that we had filmed the thing and were inspired by the music, and we're thinking of it experimental cinema ourselves, wanted to express the video in a way that mirrored the music that we were hearing, then that's what the first set that I'm going to show demonstrates. David actually said, well, I would prefer it if you treated us like a football game and don't do any of these kinds of dissolves and special shots. Just have straight frames of us playing.
I got the chance to listen to one of the recordings ahead of the event.
The name of our group is Talking Heads, and the first song we'd like to do is called The Girls Want to Be with the Girls. Girls don't want to play like that. Just want to talk to the boys. Just want to do what's in their hearts. And the girls want to be with the girls. And the boys say, what do you mean? The boys say,
we came in for a second shoot and a third shoot, we figured out we could add some light. That moment, the next generation of portable video cameras suddenly appeared. So on the second shoot with the Talking Heads, we showed up with better cameras and better lighting. And we even mounted a full master shot camera from the ceiling. And, you know, what I find really interesting about that is to have seen them develop and seen David Byrne's career such that by the time you get to Stop Making Sense, which I just think of as the go-to live performance film, and you see the design element of that and the way that he builds that film working with Jonathan Demme. He's a consummate showman, and he thinks about theater, and he thinks about live music. And he was always able to carry that aesthetic forward.
The ways we shoot, produce, and consume music have changed drastically since John and Metropolis Video were working with artists in the Village in the mid-1970s. And while CBGB closed in 2006, Hazard hopes that this live footage reminds folks that developing artists of all types should be given the opportunity to grow.
CBGB's Embodied in the Moment was a place for musicians who couldn't get booked anywhere else, who had their own style of songs, who just had new material. They were not cover bands. And the owner decided to let them come and play. I mean, CBGB is something representing country bluegrass. But one of the musicians, as I read about it, persuaded the owner to start booking these independent groups that were just sort of around at that moment. The term punk rock hadn't been invented. It came along right in that era. And a magazine called Punk showed up. And there was just a sense, especially on the Lower East Side, that this was a pretty feral moment, but you could really experience something that was unique and matched the mood of the city.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And that screening at The Common Good is coming up. And we should note that The Common Good is owned by Radio Catskill board member Matthew Goldman. We'll take a break with more Radio Catskill after this.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got Stereo Overstimulation by the Mallet Men, also new sounds by the Hollywood Film New Orchestra, and TV Private Eye Jazz. Daryl Brogdon here. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Congress has approved a White House request to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and enriching everyday life. But without federal funding, we are relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. What do railroad conductors from the early 1900s, clams, and modern-day music have in common? Well, they all come together at the Catskills Conductors Clam Bake. The fifth annual event is happening soon, next month. Jennifer Grossman is here live to share the story behind it and how you can be part of the fun. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you today?
I'm okay. For those who may not know, tell us about the Conductors Clam Bake and how this first began as a tradition in the Catskills.
Absolutely. So the O&W Railroad was a very active industry here in the late 1800s. And it was critical because we were predominantly a rural agricultural community, creating wonderful products, predominantly milk and eggs. And we had a 2-hour plus trip to New York City, which was a wonderful growing market. So O&W was really the impetus behind growing the agricultural communities in the Catskill region. However, as we know, railroads require tracks and they're loud and they have a lot of steam and smoke. And so sort of in exchange for and thanks to the communities that the railroad lines went through, the conductors hosted an annual clam bake. And this was held on Sherwood Island in the hamlet of Livingston Manor. And they had multiple year after year, wonderful clam bakes that would amass over 3,000 people with tens of thousands of clams and corn and potatoes. And it was really a celebration of the community, the welcoming of the community to the industry, and the industry, the railroad community, being really thankful for the community of welcoming them.
And this is put on by your restaurant, The Smoke Joint, in the Manor. And this is the fifth year, as I mentioned. So how has it evolved from this, you know, celebration of the folks that worked on the O&W to what it is today?
Exactly. So as we all know, and we are very blessed to have, the growth of our downtown rural main streets. There's a vibrancy in the culture, the cuisine. We have people that have relocated here realizing the value of the natural asset and setting and the wonderful business opportunities that they provide. So this was our way, the Smoke Joint, owned by BK Manor, my brother Ben Grossman, and my brother from another mother, Craig Samuel. And we were really proud to sort of reinvigorate this celebration as a business that's been in Livingston Manor and benefited by, and it's giving back. So this fifth annual event is a little different from the other four prior. It will be located at the site of the Smoke Joint this year, which is a smaller and a little more tighter area to sort of aggregate in. We're really excited. We have a pavilion that covers our picnic tables. We'll have a lot more chairs and tables. And this year we are going to host somewhat of a battle of the bands.
Yes. Tell us about this battle of the bands and this. Is it a brass hat contest?
Exactly. So, Tom Simran of Killer Trout Productions, who's also a brilliant strategist and has worked in the music industry for years, has been working with us and came up with these great ideas of a brass hat award and an iron horse award, which are two terms used in the railroad industry. And for us, this is an opportunity to really support the local talent in the Catskill region. We're going to have, when we say battle of the bands, it sounds contentious, but this will be a lot of fun. Bands or solo or duos that will be performing will have 20 minutes. They will perform an original and or a cover and a few other songs, and they will be competing for an $850 cash prize.
Nice.
Each of them. And this also was made possible by support from the STEAM Foundation. That's the Siegel family, who have been really great supporters of the arts, and I know of Radio Catskill as well. So it's really, as we know, this is a time when we need to support our arts and culture more than ever before. And on top of having these local, bands come and perform and giving cash prizes, the 50-50 cash raffle, which we do every year, and is also to benefit a local nonprofit, is going to benefit Radio Catskill WJFF this year.
Well, we're very grateful for that. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. We know that, again, it takes a community to support the arts and culture that we get so much from, and this is a small way for us to identify and highlight the value of Radio Catskill and our arts and culture and give back a bit.
And it's needed now more than ever.
Absolutely.
If you hadn't heard, let me talk a little bit more about the contest supporting the creative community. And it, you know, has a title, which is a catchy title. It's not really a battle, but it really does kind of show the showcases these local artists. And what do you want to say about that and how it sort of creates and cultivates that sense of community among not only the artists, but just everybody, that we have this rich cultural well to draw from.
Absolutely. And we really do. We have so much local talent. What the Smoke Joint has done since we've opened, we've hosted these Riverside Sessions, where every Saturday from Memorial Day to Labor Day, we have live music, 5 to 8 p.m. And it's really about, again, bringing in the local folks that are talented, that may just play for friends and family, but hey, why not try something out in front of a public audience? So we've really seen incredible skill and ability, and wanted to highlight it in this way with a nice hefty cash prize. And so we're expecting a lot of the names and faces that we've seen over the last 5 years play at our restaurant, but also at a lot of the other wonderful venues, other restaurants and breweries, distilleries, all throughout the region. So we welcome anyone who hasn't otherwise reached out to us. You can go to www.catskillsclambake.com, and you there can find an application to apply for a position for the Battle of the Bands. And again, there'll be two contests. One is the Brass Hat Award. One is the Iron Hat Award, Iron Horse Award. Both are $850 cash prize. And we really encourage everyone to get an application in.
Are those in different categories? Because you've got a couple of categories here, best original song, best cover performance.
Exactly. Those are one in each category, and you can participate in both if you like. But we really encourage people to apply, because the more the merrier, and it really, regardless of whether you win the prize, you will have a really fabulous audience to play before.
And beyond the contest, talk a little bit more about the Clam Bake in terms of food and atmosphere.
So much fun. So we're going to have a separate tent on site that will have our traditional clam and shrimp boils. So these will be wonderful bags of corn, potatoes, and either shrimp or clams that you'll be able to enjoy. We'll have all of our classic barbecue, our ribs and our brisket, our chicken, our wings, our fried chicken, and all the great sides. All of our sides are vegetarian. Beans and greens are vegan. And our fabulous different house-made cocktails, local beer from our local three breweries in the town of Rockland. And we'll have lots of swag, great t-shirts and hats and beanies.
What do you call it when you remember how the food tasted? Like, I'm having this, besides salivating.
A flashback.
Like a flashback, a food flashback right now. I'm like, oh, I'm remembering that shrimp and the food.
Yes. Yeah.
And so do you have a particular favorite memory of past clam bakes that you want to share?
So, you know, what I love to see was the kids dancing in the field to the bands, that we had the vendors and craft vendors spread out. We had the dining tent. We had everyone running around serving food, and these wonderful children frolicking and enjoying the music. And it really, with the backdrop of the river and the mountain, it just gave a sense of connection that we as a community that are present here, looking forward to the future and growing, are still really, really tied to our historic roots of why we came up here, for the wonderful natural assets that give us so much joy and pleasure, and really add to a feeling of connectivity to nature and to one another.
And when you were plotting this, 5 years ago, you know, this was your intent, did you expect it to become more than just, oh, another weekend festival? Are you surprised about how it's evolved? And what does that mean for you?
Yeah, I really have. You know, we wanted this to be for the people in our community that live here year round. Obviously, also welcome to visitors and tourists. But really, again, a thank you to all of the local families and friends and multi-generation folks that are here. It's September 7th on Sunday. So it's a little bit after the big summer rush, you know, after the Labor Day. So we're hoping it's a lot of local friends and faces that we see. And it really has been a wonderful connectivity to people that live here year round.
It's really become like a community gathering event.
It has been. Yeah. It has been. Yeah.
Let's remind folks again about the bands, how they can register, and then folks where they can get more information.
Absolutely. So again, if you're interested in applying, and we really encourage many, many more people to join in, please go to www.catskillsclambake.com. There's an application there. You can also reach out to us at thesmokejoint@gmail.com. And in terms of coming to the Catskills Conductors Clam Bake, it's from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday, September 7th. We will have parking very nearby. We will not have parking on site. We're going to have craft vendors in the parking lot, and we're going to have access for the musicians to go in and out. But there will be be parking across the street and next door to us downtown. This will also allow folks that attend the Clam Bake to walk around downtown and visit all of our other local businesses and friends. So 12 to 7, September 7th at the Smoke Joint.
Jennifer Grossman from the Smoke Joint. It's the fifth annual Catskills Conductors Clam Bake. And again, we're so grateful for you helping us out as part of this too. And just this great community event coming up the weekend after Labor Day.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another big tradition that's starting today is the New York State Fair near Syracuse. As Ellen Abbott with the New York Public News Network reports, fairgoers will find their old favorites, but there's always something new to experience.
The first thing fair officials showed off during the annual media preview, a new take on an old food, cream puffs. Pastries sandwiched between fresh whipped cream, courtesy of New York State dairy farmers. Fair director Julie LaFave gives it high marks.
I thought I was just getting a bite of cream there, but look at all of that surprise underneath. All that pistachio crunch.
This is LaFave's second year heading up the yearly exposition. And one of the things she's trying to do, make sure all parts of the 375-acre fairgrounds are being utilized. And that starts with looking at a map of every inch of the fair.
Where has traffic slowed down for the past few years? And then we talk to our electricians, and we talk to our plumbers, and we look at the traffic patterns and fire lanes. And if it checks all those boxes, then we put stuff there.
For example, an empty grassy area in front of the administration building. This year, the Mobile Museum of Tolerance fills that spot, bringing what program director Lindsay Brill calls an important message in this day and age.
Take lessons from history in order to confront discrimination, anti-Semitism, bigotry, racism, just hate and discrimination in all its forms.
Officials are also trying to emphasize the roots of the fair, which started in 1841 as an agricultural exposition. That means an overhaul of the horticulture building to boost visibility of products made in New York. State Agriculture Commissioner Richard Ball says that starts with the centerpiece of it all, a new Taste of New York booth.
We've got over $100 million in sales since we started it. So this is becoming very popular with consumers and with our growers.
And in that booth, something you can't buy anywhere else but New York State, according to manager Christopher Ian, honeyberry jam.
I would say it's kind of a cross between blueberry and elderberry. Really nice.
Last year's attendance for the 13-day fair was just shy of 900,000. LaFave doesn't rule out hitting the 1 million mark this year, but admits maybe that's not the most important metric of a successful fair.
If you have a really, really high attendance number, is it as enjoyable as it could be? So the long answer and the short answer is we'd like to see a lot of people here, but we want them all to have a good time.
In Syracuse, I'm Ellen Abbott for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll visit the Art in the Garden in Narrowsburg. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. And from listeners like you.
This week on This American Life, a man and his car.
You know, like some people also like use the pronoun it for the car. I use the pronoun she for her. Like, and people say you are in a relationship with this car. So.
In the small community where he lives, this guy Ali has the only car, making him the unofficial taxi driver, delivery guy, and school bus driver. So what happens when his car makes an enemy?
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A new creative space has taken root in Narrowsburg. Sculptor Naomi Tepich, along with co-founder Cass Collins, has opened the Art Garden, a sculpture garden in the Narrowsburg Flats that brings art outdoors for the whole community to enjoy. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Naomi Tepich to learn more about the vision behind this project, what visitors can expect, and how the Art Garden hopes to grow.
Good morning, Naomi Tepich, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning to you, Valerie.
Well, it's another year, and you are having an opening at the Art Garden in Narrowsburg. It's a sculpture garden, and there's an opening Thursday, the 21st, from 4 to 6, with a rain date of Sunday, the 24th, from 4 to 6. Tell us about the Art Garden, its history, its mission, and about the event itself.
Okay, be glad to. So the history is that during the pandemic, Cass Collins, a writer for the River Reporter, and myself, sculptor, we were bike riding. One day she wanted to come over to my studio and see the outdoor sculpture that I have there. And she wound up looking around and liking it. She said she had some extra land on her property, which is in the flats of Narrowsburg. And she said, we both decided, why don't we do a sculpture park there? And I, having had quite a few outdoor shows, was excited by the idea. And so we subsequently went to her property. I looked it over. She had beautiful garden, all kinds of flowering bushes, and the property extended to the river. So that's how it began. And I was the one most responsible for finding the artist, and she's the one that would maintain the land. And she put up chairs near each sculpture and lighting, and made it look like a real place to go. So that's how we began.
And this is your fourth year, correct?
Right.
And can you briefly share your mission with us?
Our mission is to educate the public in sculpture and bring their awareness to that sculpture can be outdoors and can be community-oriented, a place where people could come and sit down, look at a sculpture, meditate a little bit, think about the artist's work. So it's kind of a peaceful place where people can go, other than a gallery with four white walls.
Yes, this is in the beautiful outdoors, so we should embrace that concept. Can you tell us about this event coming up on Thursday? What should we expect?
Okay, so we have about 10 artists in the park. It's not a huge sculpture show, but most of the pieces are on the large size. And we have, at first we started with artists that were not from the immediate local area. But now, this Thursday, we're going to have the unveiling of three new sculptures that are from local artists. One artist, Matt Pazorski, is from Ellenville, New York, and another one is Patricia Blouth from Equinox, Pennsylvania. And then there's Janet Rutowski, who's from Barryville, New York, and Brooklyn. So we'll also have Bernard Klevikas, who's from Upper Manhattan, and he's had a piece here for quite a few years already, but he's going to give an artist talk, as well as the new artists. We'll give all of them give short artist talks. So people will arrive at hopefully around 4, look around the place, and then we'll start artist talks, which will probably last about 45 minutes. And then we have Prosecco and mocktails to offer the public, some snacks as well.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful afternoon to be outdoors with these very interesting sculptures.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, you can look at pictures on Instagram at ArtGarden52, and also that we have other sculptures there, too.
Okay, Naomi, thank you for taking on this endeavor along with Cass Collins.
And thank you.
And that is culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking with Naomi Tevich about the Art Garden in the Narrowsburg Flats. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can sign up for our free newsletter at our website, wjffradio.org. You'll get it in your inbox this Friday if you sign up today. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, we'll rebroadcast a conversation with Paul Simon from 2016. The legendary singer-songwriter talked to writer Dave Eggers about his painstaking process, even taking 2 years to write a single song, and about the physics of sound. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Rain continuing today and into the evening. There's locally heavy rainfall possible and rainfall near half an inch. High today, only 57. Showers continuing overnight with, again, that potential for heavy rainfall, low of 52, and additional accumulation around a quarter of an inch. Chance of a morning shower tomorrow, otherwise cloudy and a high of 68. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.